grew up with French, English, and Mauritian Creole, French-based Creole. I learned German at school, and I've also learned Portuguese, Finnish. And when I came down to the territory many, many years ago, 1989 was the first time I started learning Djambaponyu and Gupaponyu. I have a little bit of problems sometimes to express myself in these two languages because, of course, I don't have much exposure. I spent some time in Roper River in Nukur, and so I learned the Creole from there. So it's quite a few languages, actually, plus the sign languages that I have learned as a researcher later.
Okay, so let's talk about these sign languages. You've just presented, I guess, would it be a symposium on alternative sign languages. Do you want to talk a bit about your presentation?
These alternate sign languages are quite rare, I would say, when we look at sign languages in the world. I mean, we do make a distinction between primary sign languages as compared to alternate, the primary being the L1, the first language of the deaf community, whereas alternate sign languages are sign languages used by the hearing community, especially in Indigenous Australia. More specifically in Arnhem Land, we find that the hearing communities use these type of sign languages, alternate sign languages, in under certain circumstances, such as, let's say, for ritual purposes, but also for long-distance communication and in early times, in times of mourning and taboos, when speech is forbidden or at least silence is requested. That's when people use alternate sign language. But if we take the case of a Yolnu sign language in the three communities we've been looking at, so Yerkala, Milingimbi, and Galiwinku, we find that people use this alternate sign language as an alternate to speech on a daily basis in daily interaction, whether it's for gossiping, giving some news, it's sign language, yeah.
How did you find out about this sign language?
More specifically, as I said, when I came here in 1990, I was invited by Bachelor College, so I went to some of the communities. I started with Galiwinku, and that's where I noticed that people, hearing people, were using sign languages. And as I've said before, it's a very rare case. I mean, you do find this also, this state of affairs in Mesoamerica, but with Indigenous people there, hearing communities. But it's not something which is very common and well-known. So I was fascinated from day one. And since then, I've been working, slowly working on my own. But then after that, we've a team, a big team of Indigenous people in different communities to look closely at their alternate sign languages.
So, Doctor, has there been any discussion about these being used when people were in hiding in the bush and trying to escape the settlers?
Well, there are a few mentions of these in novels here and there, but I don't think that this has been handled systematically. Yes, when we look at early reports written or essays written by anthropologists, we find reference to alternate sign language or what they call at the time hand talk or sign languages in general. It's possible that people were also using these languages are very, very old, just as old, I would assume, as spoken languages, for the simple reason that these alternate sign languages are part and parcel of the Indigenous culture. I mean, they are embedded in culture, and for cultural practices, people, hearing people, use sign languages. I mean, there are also a few deaf people around, but the majority of the people using the sign languages are hearing people, basically.
And what are the Yolnu people saying regarding, I guess, the, you know, retention of this sign language and passing it on through families?
Well, first of all, Yolnu sign language is a very, very, people look at it as a very strong language, but there are obviously dangers of loss. Language endangerment is everywhere. With the Yolnu, I mean, the kids grew up from birth, they grew up with learning different spoken languages, but of their parents, mothers and fathers, but also learning this alternate sign language, well, the one that is used in the community. And that's why Indigenous people in general, those communities where we still find those alternate sign languages, are interesting, fascinating, because they present us a rare case of what we call bimodal bilingualism. It's not just being bilingual with two, three, four spoken languages. We know very well that Indigenous people are, but it goes beyond this, beyond modality. So it's two modalities being involved. They are, let's say, bilingual, multilingual in speech, but also in sign languages. So they juggle basically on a daily basis with these two modalities, which is very, very rare and very interesting.
So what was the response to your presentation on this?
We had quite a few people around, and I would say very positive. It was part of the attempt to raise awareness. I do come back to Australia on a regular basis. With a team, we always try and organise workshops at CDU and in other places to raise awareness about the existence of these languages and also the maintenance of these languages. So I would say there was a lot of discussion, and some of the people had previously been in the previous workshops we organised, the Northern Institute organised some years ago, and some new faces coming and joining the discussion, the current discussion here.
And are the Yolngu people involved in that?
Yes, they are. I would not have been able to present any of what I presented today without their permission, as well as their full support. So these two aspects are very important. I do not work on my own. It's always with a team, and the team has to ask to come and join them as a linguist to facilitate the process, and then I'm on board.
Lovely. So obviously you've spent some time with the Yolngu people, and you've sat down and have you learnt much of this sign language?
Yes, I have, indeed. Well, working with people over several years, you automatically get to know the language, not only the structures, but you start using it yourself. And yes, I do, indeed.
Can you talk a bit about language endangerment?
Right. First of all, as we know, there's a lot of loss of studies going on language endangerment in Australia. And scholars have been investigating spoken languages for a long time. And it's only recently that some people have started working on sign languages. And the work we've done here in Annamnan shows us very clearly, and also some of it in Western Australia, shows us very clearly that these languages need to be preserved. I mean, it's part of a cultural heritage. And while, as I said, the Yolngu sign language is strong, there are other sign languages around that are not that strong. And in fact, elders have been sort of complaining, saying, well, you know, we don't see the kids using these sign language or using enough of these sign languages. The transmission is there, but I think as years go past, there is less and less. Some communities, obviously, in other communities more. So there is a need, a really urgent need to document these languages and also try and preserve, keep them.